And here we are on the fourth day of the new year. And if your resolution for this year was, okay, January 4th, I'm going to get back to work. And this is going to be the year when I finally meet those goals. I'm going to hit those bars that my boss has set for me. I'm going to get that promotion. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to get a new job or maybe even get a job. Whatever it is, motivation is at the heart of all of that. And I'm not talking about motivational speakers and that sort of thing. I'm talking about, okay, here's a carrot. We'll dangle it in front of you. And here's a stick, and we'll hit you with it. And you can keep chasing after that carrot. And if you can catch the carrot, you get the big prize. Does that work? Let's talk about it with Dan Pink, who is the author of the New York Times bestseller, A Whole New Mind, and is now back with a new book called Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. Dan, welcome to Cairo FM.
Paul, it's great to be with you.
Good to talk to you again. Does the carrot and stick work?
Yes, they do, and that's part of the problem. They work very well for simple, routine tasks. So if you want someone to do something really simple and straightforward that doesn't require a heck of a lot of creativity, giving them what I like to call an if-then reward, if you do this, then you get that, works exceptionally well. If you want somebody to do something and focus on the short term, they're outstanding. But if you want people to take a slightly longer view, or if you want people to do anything requiring any degree or even a small degree of creativity or conceptual thinking, there's 40 years of research that shows that these carrots, these if-then motivators, don't work very well, and they often do harm.
So people who are in more creative fields, and that doesn't necessarily mean the arts, it could be somebody who's a software engineer who's got to come up with something
sure.
new, what works for them?
Well, I mean, I think software is a really good example. I mean, the key here to start off with is that, you know, I'm not saying that money doesn't matter. Money matters a lot. If people aren't being paid fairly, if people can't support their family, you're not going to get much of motivation at all. But once you get past that level, money doesn't have a huge effect on most people's motivation, certainly their enduring motivation. I think software is a really, really good example. Let's take something like the open source movement. These are software programmers who work for free and give away their product. These are people who do things like Linux, the corporate web, the corporate server software, Apache, the web server software. Now, you know, our traditional notions of economics and business says this is not possible, that no one would ever work for free and give away their product. We are rational calculators of our economic self-interest. And yet these open source software is challenging some of the big enterprises. And you have something like Wikipedia, where, again, no one's getting paid. And Wikipedia just put Seattle's own Microsoft Encarta out of business. So what people are looking for is those baseline rewards, being paid fairly. But beyond that, they're looking for a sense of autonomy and self-direction. They're looking for the chance to get better and better at something that matters. And they're looking to plug into a purpose larger than themselves. And that provides that provides much more enduring motivation than these short-term carrots and sticks. And this is not, you know, Paul, a philosophy or a moral claim. You know, there's 40 years of behavioral science research that shows this is true.
And don't we see people motivated to do stuff that they like doing in the blogosphere and on Facebook and in the Twitterverse as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that in many ways, these technologies have liberated that capacity. I mean, it's actually a fascinating thing. If you look at something like all the creativity that is burgeoning online, whether it's blogs or whether it's people contributing to videos to YouTube or whether it's participation in open source projects, people are taking their discretionary time and using their talent, not for their employer, but doing it for free and giving away their work, which suggests that we're not simply horses who respond only to a carrot and a stick, that we have other drives, the drive toward mastery, as I mentioned, getting better at stuff, the drive to make a contribution. And I think that in many ways we've neglected that very powerful third drive that human beings have. We have a biological drive, absolutely. We have a reward and punishment drive. Absolutely. But that's not all that it is to be human. This third drive to do things because they matter, because they're interesting, because they contribute is really powerful. And I fear that business hasn't quite woken up to that.
Yeah, but let's be honest. A lot of the people who are creating all of that content and giving it away for free, they're hoping that somebody will find that stuff online and say, you know what? You're brilliant. Here's $1 million.
Yeah, I think so. I think for many people, that's a far-off distant hope. But I actually think that that's actually a very small percentage of the people doing it. I mean, I interviewed a couple of years ago a lot of the people participating in Wikipedia. And what they were doing is, what they wanted to do was make a contribution and do something interesting. And actually the research, there's a lot of research looking at the motives behind people who are participating in these open source software projects. And the two big motivators are basically the challenge of a really interesting problem and the ability to contribute. And, you know, I like to think that if regular companies offered greater challenges and gave people a chance to contribute, they might be better off, and people wouldn't be spending their discretionary time working for free for someone else.
This is News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM. Paul Harris doing the Dave Ross Show and talking with Dan Pink, author of A Whole New Mind, and his new book is called Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. The book is just out today, and in fact, Dan will be in Seattle 1 week from today at Seattle Town Hall in an event sponsored by the University Bookstore. It's $5 to attend. You can get the tickets at the door or online at brownpapertickets.com. As you talk about the change in motivation, are you seeing more American companies realize this and use it effectively?
Yes and no. I think some are and some aren't. If you look at, I mean, here's a well-known example from Silicon Valley, Google. Google has its employees. At Google, employees can spend 20% of their time working on whatever they want. And now Google doesn't assign away the IP rights, intellectual property rights, to what's created during that time, which is smart because that 20% time has birthed a huge number of Google's innovations, including Gmail. Gmail was not an official project. It was a 20% project. It was an intrinsic motivation project. And again, this is a very different kind of reward scheme. They're not saying to people, if you innovate, you'll get a bonus. They're saying, hey, do something great. We're going to give you the freedom to do that. I'll give you another one. One of my favorite examples is from a company that no one's ever heard of, a company called Atlassian, which is a software company, another software company in Australia. And they do something really cool. Once a quarter, they say to their software developers, you can work on anything you want, any way you want, with whomever you want. All you have to do is show the results to the rest of the company at the end of these 24 hours. They call these things FedEx days because you have to deliver something overnight. And it turns out that that one day of intense autonomy, self-direction, freedom to do whatever you feel like doing, has produced a whole array of software fixes, a whole array of ideas for new products, upgrades to existing products that wouldn't otherwise have emerged. And again, you know, that is not a carrot. That is actually treating people like people who have this innate urge to direct their own lives and do interesting things.
Okay, but when we talk about motivation, we have a lot of listeners listening to us right now who don't work for companies that operate that way, or they're not even in a profession where they have the opportunity to work for companies that work that way. You know, a guy who's, I'm a mechanic and I got to change out a transmission today. That's not going to work for me. Or I'm a waitress and I got to go and I got to serve people at the Cheesecake Factory today. Are there ways to motivate them differently than do your job, get paid?
Absolutely, and you know, and there are actually a lot of really interesting examples of that from professions that we might think of as not the elite professions. Let's take something like call centers. Call centers is a very routine, rule-based sort of job. A call comes in, you punch a few numbers on your computer, and you bring up a script, and then you read the script. That people are often monitored. People are often timed about how quickly they do their calls. It's very, very low on the autonomy scale. Well, you have a company like Zappos, the shoe company, that does things very differently. It lets its call center representatives handle calls however they want. They don't time them. They don't monitor them. They don't have to work from a script. You solve the customer's problem. Now, this is heresy in the world of call centers, and yet Zappos is ranked consistently now, a very young company, consistently in the top 10 on customer service. You even see it in a study that I write about in this book from the University of Pennsylvania on hospital janitors. Now, that's not a job that many of us would aspire to. But the study of hospital janitors showed that janitors who saw their job simply as coming in, sweeping the floor, and leaving at the appropriate time weren't particularly happy in their job. But janitors who had even a small amount of freedom to sculpt their jobs, who saw their job as talking to patients maybe when they came in, or helping out nurses from time to time, not only did they enjoy their jobs more, but they ended up advancing in the hospital. That it was that even the sort of smidgen of freedom and self-direction, even in that kind of job, taps something in human beings that I think is powerful.
His News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM, Paul Harris, talking with author Dan Pink. His new book is called Drive. We're going to take a break and come back with more in just a moment as the Dave Ross Show continues on Cairo FM.
Dave Ross on News Talk 97.3 Cairo FM,
where Seattle stays in touch.
We're hearing now that one of the court officers at the federal courthouse in Las Vegas who was shot by a gunman this morning has died. We'll have an update for you in just a few minutes from the Cairo newsroom. I'm Paul Harris, filling in for Dave Ross today and talking with Dan Pink, the author of the bestseller A Whole New Mind, who's back with a new book just out today called Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us, talking about how you can give workers freedom and let them self-direct, and you find out you get remarkable things out of them, better than the old carrot-and-stick approach. As you were working on this project, Dan, and since it's published, been published today, and you know people knew it was coming out for several weeks, and you've been getting great pre-orders online for it as well, have you heard from companies who say, "Hey, we do that," and other companies who say, "Hey, how can we do that?"
Actually, Paul, I've heard from both. I mean, I've heard from a company, a software company, again, that sent me this long note about explaining why they eliminated commissions for their salespeople, which, again, seems almost like heresy. And what they found is that their total sales went up because their sales force was more cooperative. Their sales force was focused a little bit more long-term rather than hitting, say, weekly or monthly or quarterly numbers. And then the salespeople got a piece of the action in the aggregate. And so that is a very strange thing. I mean, motivated entirely by commissions, but here's a place that discarded them altogether.
Now explain that to me. People who are selling things, who are getting a piece of the action instead of a commission. I thought a commission was a piece of the action.
No, they get a piece of the action based on the total company performance.
So the company makes money, you make money.
You got it.
Okay. So how does that change their motivation? I mean, it used to be...
Oh, my gosh, what it means... Okay, let's take a typical salesperson. Typical salesperson is going to get... often will get a bonus for hitting a certain number in a given month. But then if they go above that number, they don't get any more. So what do salespeople do? They basically, kick off if they for the rest of the month if they've already hit their number. They have no incentive to do even better. They have a lot of times sales forces will pit one salesperson against another. That discourages cooperation, obviously, among them, which to the detriment of the customer. And so what they said is that if we just have people focus in on serving customers well and on helping each other out and on giving people great service and on finding exactly the software that they need, then we might not have rocket high numbers this month, but over time, we as a company are going to do a lot better, and you as an individual are going to do a lot better.
Wouldn't you also solve that problem by saying we're not going to cap your commission? That way the people who are really, 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 really motivated to make money and work hard are going to be rewarded no matter how high those numbers go?
I think there's a possibility of that, actually. I think one of the things that you see when there are very, very, very high-stakes rewards is that some people will take the low road. And that's the other thing that you see in a lot of these incentive systems where there's a huge payoff for hitting a short-term goal. But, I mean, I think that, I think that's actually a very fair point, and it's probably worth experimenting with. The problem is that there is, a bigger problem is there isn't enough experimentation. We think that this kind of 19th century, to some extent even, 20th century regimen of carrots and sticks is the only way anybody's going to do anything worthwhile. And it completely disproves that. I mean, if you look even in Seattle, if you look at great entrepreneurs, somebody like Jeff Bezos, if you talk to him, see about his motivation for creating Amazon, it was to change things. It wasn't necessarily to make a bundle of money. He ended up making a bundle of money. But most entrepreneurs are actually motivated by the urge to fix something that's wrong and to make a contribution to the world. And so we have this very narrow view of what human beings are. And I think, you know, it's one reason why I think that this past decade has been such a decade of spectacular underachievement. This endless boom-bust cycle, this lack of concern for the long term. And I think that in some ways our motivation system has become totally out of sync with the way we work today, but even the way we are more deeply as human beings.
All right, Dan, before I let you go today, I got to ask you about the event you did on Friday. You did a teleseminar on New Year's Day, and you said you wouldn't blog about it, you wouldn't record it, you wouldn't distribute it. So maybe you're supposed to be gone forever.
So why don't you ask me about it then?
So I'm absolutely going to ask you about it. One of the things that you did on Friday was identify some big trends that you think you'll see in business this year. So break your vow and share some of that with us.
Sure thing, absolutely. I'd be delighted to do that. Very briefly, one of them is, I'll tell you one, about 10 years ago, 1999, 11 years ago, I did a story for Fast Company magazine, which had famously done a magazine story titled The Brand Called You. And this story was titled The Brand Called URL. And it interviewed a fellow named Nathan Shedroff, who made this outlandish claim that everybody would have their own website. This is before we even had the word blog. And that article was quickly forgotten, but Nathan ended up being right. And now it's commonplace that everybody has their own website, their own blog. I think that the next iteration of that are apps for everybody. Right now, very few people have their own app, whether it's for Google's Android or for the iPhone or whatever. I think that we're about to see an explosion of apps for everybody in the same way that we saw websites for everybody. I think it could be really cool. The price is coming down. The ability to code them is coming down. Apps for everybody.
And what would those apps be?
The other one that I'm really interested in, which is some work being done by two Wired writers, Kevin Kelly and Gary Wolf, is something called the quantified self, where the number of ways we have to measure what we do is astonishing. So there are websites and devices out there to measure to time you when you sleep and how well you sleep, to monitor your when you go for a run, you can put a chip in your shoe, and that will report to a website how many miles you ran and how fast you ran it. All kinds of ways to log what we eat. There's a site called Bedpost where you record how often and what kind of sex that you have. This idea that we are this endless data stream and are able to get in some ways a statistical package of who we really are is going to be huge for healthcare. I call this one Socrates meets statistics.
Okay. I got to go back
know
to
know thyself, but know it quantitatively.
Okay, but I've got to go back to the apps for everyone, or everyone has an app. What would an individual app be?
I don't know. Maybe an individual Paul Harris app would be. I could subscribe to my Paul Harris app, and I would know. I would be immediately sent every radio broadcast that you did, or I would know where you're appearing, or I would have your Twitter stream, or I would have. You know, a list of your greatest hits and your greatest interviews. I don't know what it is. In the same way that in 1999, this idea that we would all have our own personal website, we'd be like, well, what the heck would we do with that? Now it's commonplace. So I just think that we haven't seen anything yet. The early adopters on this are bands. There are a lot of bands that have their own app that can report where they're appearing, will offer ways to buy their music. But I don't think there's any reason, in the same way that in 1999 it seemed peculiar that everyone would have their own website, that in a year or two, more and more of us are going to have our own apps. And I think what's really cool is that we're going to find all kinds of groovy new things to do with it that our constricted imaginations right now can't fathom.
Well, I'm looking forward to the Daniel Pink app, which will reveal everything you talked about.
I'm sorry? It's coming in 2 weeks.
oh, well, you know what? When it comes out, I'll download it, and I'll expect to see all the super secret stuff that you discussed in your teleseminar on Friday.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. And it's, and you know what? It's free, too.
Great.
No one's going to pay even 99 cents for an app from me.
That's what I was thinking about my own app. Yeah, I would have to pay them to download it. The book is called Drive, The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. Dan Pink is going to be here in Seattle 1 week from today at Seattle Town Hall next Monday, January 11th, 7:30 p.m. It's sponsored by University Bookstore. You can get tickets online at brownpapertickets.com. Congratulations on another success, Dan. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me on the program.
Always a pleasure. You can also find more about him on his website, danpink.com. I'm Paul Harris, filling in for Dave Ross. We're going to go to CBS for an update on the situation in Las Vegas, and then we're back with more of the Dave Ross Show on Cairo FM.